We welcome onto the programme now Donegal TV host and social media star, Eric Roberts. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, folks. How are we?
How are you getting on?
I'm absolutely fantastic. A little bit up the walls. It's been a busy couple of weeks.
But I would say so.
I'm delighted the news is out there now. I can stop keeping it a secret.
Right. So you are going to be one of the stars on Dancing with the Stars. How long has this been in the works, Eric?
It's actually been a couple of months. Yeah, it's I found out around just after the summertime, I suppose, and I've been keeping it as close to the chest as I've been able to since then. Now I've definitely let it slip a couple of times to family and friends, so I've been excited for this day now to be able to talk about it.
Yeah, okay. And how excited are you? How nervous are you? What way do you approach these things? Really in your stride or nervous or what?
It definitely won't be in my stride. We've been rehearsing for a couple of weeks and the legs are in absolute bits. So I don't think it really is what I signed myself up for. It's very, very intense. But I think I'm a good mix of excited and nervous, I suppose. It's a daunting task on live television and dancing things that you've never danced before. So no, I'm looking forward to the challenge.
But it's also a fantastic way to showcase yourself as well, too. I mean, obviously, people will know your work on social media, your transition then to TV, and now this in another environment, you know, framed in this really, really popular, well-known TV show.
Absolutely. It's just been a very exciting couple of years, I suppose, for me in my career. When I left my job as an SNA a few years ago, I didn't think I'd be where I am now. So the opportunities have been incredible, and I've enjoyed, I suppose, setting myself up for these challenges. And I think this is just another and really daunting challenge. But I suppose I've become addicted to doing these sort of things now and putting myself out there and seeing where I end up. So I'm really looking forward to the show.
To achieve what you've achieved, you have to work very, very hard. Nothing's handed to you in the industry. You know, you have to get yourself out there and prove you're capable. That's now. But when you made that decision to sort of jack in a job you enjoyed and that regular wage, did you feel you were rolling the dice at that stage, Eric? Or do you sort of, you know, imagine it and make it so?
Well, I'd been creating content for a couple of years before I decided to step away from the job as an SNA, and I was in a very lucky position to be making money online already. It wasn't a case of I might try this and see if it works out. It was already sort of working out at the time, so it was a no-brainer, I suppose. I was saying no to really amazing opportunities to keep the job as an SNA. So when I decided to step away from that, I had more time and more energy to put in and focus on online, and it's the best decision I ever made because it's led to this sort of amazing life that I have at the moment, and I consider myself very, very lucky. I feel like I haven't really worked since I left that job as an SNA. I know you say I have worked very hard to get to where I am, but I've just enjoyed what I'm doing so much that it hasn't really felt that way, I suppose.
Yeah, and in terms of your own time, Eric, you know, between the content that you continue to create, your TV commitments, you know, you're a family man, young family, I think you're building a house as well, you know, that's enough for anyone. How much capacity do you have left for dedicated to Dancing with the Stars? I'm sure plenty, but that's a lot to be juggling, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I've wanted to do the show for a while, but it was never really an option because of the commute up and down to Donegal. It would have just been horrendous. But we're living up here now in Dublin for the last couple of months just because of the new role on Ireland AM. So it was sort of, if I was ever going to do it, it was going to be this year. We're hoping to be back in our new home in Donegal in the next couple of years. So it just made sense. And obviously my wife, Niamh, so incredibly supportive, and she's been amazing with her young son, Rian, to even allow me to take on such a mammoth task. But the great thing about being up in Dublin is I can be home every evening and see them every day, so I don't have to travel up and down, which is great.
Yeah, and when opportunities come, opportunities that you created, you have to grab them, don't you? Because you never know when they might come again. So are you in it to win it, Eric? Like, what is your dancing like? I'm sure there's people listening have seen you danced, but what's do you have the basics, or are you starting from scratch? Have you two left feet?
I suppose I have a bit of rhythm. I used to do a bit of dancing myself. Now, I don't think any popping or locking or robotics are going to help me in this competition, to be honest.
What about the running man?
The salsa. Yeah, I mean, if I can incorporate some of those moves in at some point, I'll be over the moon. But so far, there hasn't been any call for them. But I think I have hopefully a bit of rhythm and stuff now. We've done a couple of the basic moves for some of the dances, and I have to say, I am absolutely horrific at some of them. So I'm starting at the bottom like everyone else for some of the weeks. But as I say, I'm eager to learn, and I am competitive, of course. But if I can get the first few weeks over me, I'll be happy, to be honest.
Now, if this parish, would you be the likely to tap into Danny O'Carroll's experience as a fellow Donegal man?
I've been lucky enough to be speaking to Danny over the last couple of weeks and getting his advice, and he's given me some incredible advice over the last few weeks. And I know some of the other cast members over the years as well, like Hayley and Karen Mullen and stuff, so it's great to have that sort of, I suppose, friendship there, who people have experienced it and gone through it. And even Elaine Crowley, who I'm presenting with now in Ireland AM, she took part last year, so I'm getting advice from all angles, and everyone's kind of saying the same thing: it's the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life, but one of the most rewarding. So they're filling me with nerves and excitement.
And finally, does this all mean you've hung up your jersey for Downing's, Eric? What's going on?
I don't think they're in any panic to get me back down there anytime soon.
Well, I hope you're better at football than you are at pool.
Well, listen, I hope I'm better at dancing than I was there in the last couple of years playing. But listen, never say never. Coming into Championship next summer, I'll be there if
you'll
I need
see me. What the crack is. Listen, we look for. It's always great to have a local interest. I mean, these shows are immensely popular, but they become extra popular then too when you have that local interest as well. Eric, listen, fantastic to see you doing so well in all elements of your career and life. It really is great, and this is just another wonderful opportunity that you've created for yourself. The very best of luck, and we look forward to watching on.
Appreciate that, guys. Thanks for having me on. Take it easy.
Look after yourself, Eric Roberts there, who is also now going to be part of Dancing with the Stars. Is it called Dancing with the Stars up here in Ireland? Is it not? I thought it had a different name, but anyway, that's what's written in front of me. Before we move on, just to give you a reminder that we have our big Christmas cash and car draw ongoing here on Highland Radio. We've given away €5,000 already. We had John on from Quigley's Point this morning, driving his bus into Derry, and he was a lovely lad, lovely man, and a worthy winner, and all of our guests. And I think we actually had another lady there just in the last 10 minutes was in collecting a cheque. So check out a picture of that lady and Canis Wilson on our socials soon. So we've already made five people thousandaires, if they weren't already. We've got another £5,000 to give away next week. So if you like good odds and you like, good odds in terms of the amount of draws, then now's your time. You can get your tickets now. If it's payday, maybe it suits you. But obviously, listen, only if you can afford it and can have a bit of fun with your hard-earned cash. Tickets are €15. And I haven't even mentioned the top prize, which is a brand new 261 Renault Symbios worth over €35,000. It's got all the tech you would want, all the driving assistance. It's got your wireless charging, your Apple Play, CarPlay integration, a big screen. Everything that you'd want is in this car. It's a beautiful family vehicle, and it could be yours worth over €35,000. So that's what's up for grabs. £5,000, 1, 2, 3, 4, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then the car worth €35,000 plus. So maybe you've been waiting until you had a few bob. Now's the time to get your tickets if you can do so well within your means. You can go onto our website, highlandradio.com, and that means you're in all the draws from Monday, highlandradio.com, or give us a call here at the radio station, 07491 25000, and we will go through the process with you. And you can also call in if cash is your king. You can call in to us here at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny, and we can process it. Just to remind you, you don't have to answer your calls. We had a lovely chat with John this morning, but that fella, he'd won €1,000 whether he answered the phone or not. It's always lovely if you can get a chat, but you don't have to come on the radio. You don't have to answer your phone, but we love to have a chat with you. So if you're in retail, a teacher, or heading away next week, don't worry. If your ticket comes out, you're a winner. And all of our five cash winners so far, they are in the draw drum. And you know, one of these days we could get a double-double. Who's to say? Right, highlandradio.com, perfectly safe and secure, but you might prefer to speak to one of us, 07491 25000. Get your tickets now. You're in six draws, five for 1,000, one for a 35,000 car. What else would you be at? Rightio, let us take a break. I'm going to be joined by our next guest, the director, in fact, of Horseshoe, which is a production which is going to be available for you to see in cinemas very soon. So that's coming up after these messages. I'm really pleased to welcome on to the programme Edwin Mullane, who's director of Horseshoe. It is a feature which is going to be available for you and is available for you in cinemas in Bundoran and Letterkenny. So two ends of the counties sorted there. Edwin, good morning to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. My pleasure.
And congratulations. What's it like, you know, being able to talk about a finished product that you've put so much of yourself into that's now available, you know, for public consumption? I mean, you probably can pinpoint the point whereby you and Adam said, right, okay, we can do this here now. And here we are. It must be, is it surreal or is it fantastic or is it a nightmare? Is it, what is it?
It's definitely surreal and fantastic. I mean, this is 2 years work and now we're getting to showcase it in cinemas across the country. It's an independent film made outside the system. A lot of love, a lot of friendship, a lot of help in the community that got this film over the line. And now to be able to showcase it in our local area, in Bundoran Eclipse Cinema, and also in Letterkenny, another brilliant independent cinema there in Century as well. It's lovely because the people that helped us are getting to see it locally. And look, it's a very Irish film as well. It's about a family coming together. So it's perfect at Christmas that people are feeling a little bit heart.
I think we'll all relate. I haven't seen it, but looking at the description, Edwin, it looks like we'll all relate to it, if not certainly in its entirety, in parts, because it is something we're familiar with. So run us through the plot.
Yeah, so it's about a family, four adult siblings, coming home to settle a will. And they haven't spoken to each other in a while. But I suppose the added twist in this, that the father has given them 24 hours to come together and make a decision. Otherwise, his estate will go to the government. So they're under pressure and they have to come back and settle their differences. So we're, I suppose, coining it in a way that all families are mad. Everybody has a family in some shape or form.
Half of them are always mad. And you know what? You can be in the mad half and think it's the other half that's mad. That's the thing.
Absolutely.
About it.
I mean, look at my own family. I'd certainly, I could attune to that.
Yeah.
But we're getting a great reaction. Like, people are laughing. People are crying. People are seeing themselves. We had a phenomenal opening night. Before it went live around the country, we felt really strongly we wanted to do something in our community. So alongside Eclipse Bundoran, we had over 200 people see the film.
That's
in
amazing.
Our community in Bundoran.
Yeah, really
it was a great
amazing.
Night. And you know, that reaction there that night, there was people laughing, crying, ringing their parents to tell them they loved them. You know, I think there's something uniquely Irish in the story.
There
as well.
Is, but the setup is perfect for however you want to take the story, isn't it? Because, you know, presumably if the siblings haven't seen each other for a while, you don't always have to see your siblings to be very close to them, and you can see them all the time and not be so close. So, you know, those sort of relationships there, you can test that a little bit. Obviously, the passing of the father is recent, isn't it? A relatively recent, so you get to tease that out. And, of course, to how siblings speak to each other, it can be really funny, it can be really cutting, it can be all manner of things, it can be every range of emotions. You've got all of that to work with.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we also had amazing actors and have amazing actors in our cast that brought all that nuance there, you know. So I had worked a lot in the theatre and in my short films, and Adam had worked with the cast, John Connors, Mary Murray, Carolyn Bracken, Lala Roddy, the amazing Lala Roddy, Jed Murray. So we'd worked with them numerous times. So when it came on set about, you know, behaving like a family and all those little kind of little quirks, they brought it naturally to that playing, right. You know. So we're delighted that, I suppose, people are seeing nearly the gags and the little, I suppose, extra detail in not necessarily what they're saying, but how they're reacting.
Inflections,
to each other,
expressions. You know? Yeah, I know what you're saying. And there's it's tapping into some subconscious real relationship there as well, which feeds into how we react. Where it was shot then, across the Northwest effectively.
Yeah, so I live in Cliffney in County Sligo, just a few minutes from Bundoran there. And when I suppose my family are from here. I've spent all my holidays since I was a child here, and then when I moved here a couple of years ago, it was just the amazing scenery. It was just so inspiring. You know, if you have a low budget, you know you want to get the most out of every shot, and when you have Ben Bulbin in the background, or Mullagh Mór, or you know, these incredible vistas everywhere, you want to get them on screen. So we were inspired by that. We had a small window to shoot in January 2024, and we were lucky. The weather somewhat played ball with us. We had a few storms and a few power outages to get over the line, but the community got behind us, and we managed to struggle through. But so very much the Northwest is in so much of the film. And when we show the film internationally, the film has got accolades on the international circuit with the festivals. It's going to go on a theatrical release in North America, actually in March as well. But people are reacting to the scenery, and they're just saying, like, where is that? I want to go on my holidays.
Yeah, it's a big advertising. Yeah. It's almost like a tourism video as well. But you see, you will approach this as a filmmaker from a different perspective maybe. But anyway, this is my take. When you've got good people in a project like yourself and Adam, you know you're going to do the best what you can with a smaller budget. But I find some of the better films are labelled as lower budget films or films. And I think what happens is that it has to be better source material. Now, Shaw can do 25. I'm not talking about that, right? But I want about these types of films. So it has to be a really good story, right? You have to get actors who believe in the project as well. And you have to have people like yourself who really believe in the project. So the story, the scenery, the stuff that is in your control has to be really, really good, because you're not blowing up cars and relying on CGI and stuff. So it seems some of the better films, I watched a film recently called, I think, Swimming Pool or something, or The Pool, and it was made in a shoestring. But great, because great characters, great script. And really, the rest is almost just bells and whistles you don't need. So would you be in that sort of frame? You'd always take $2 billion, right? But you'd be in that frame of thinking?
I'd definitely take that if it came along, for sure. No, but I mean, we made a film that we'd want to watch. You know, like, I grew up with my dad and my older brother watching things like Only Fools and Horses, and like comedy that, you know, could switch into drama in minutes, and had like laughs, but had heart at the center of it, you know? So I suppose, look, when you're making something low budget, you're trying as much as possible to work with great actors that are going to convey that comedy and drama. Like you said, you don't have CGI, there's no car chases in this. It's really down to the power of the performances. And hopefully that audiences are going to see part of themselves and to feel that connection in how intimate the story is, you know. We did want to make it cinematic. People are commentating on the camera work and how ambitious it is, but at the center of it, you know, it's simple.
Yeah, but that's because it's purer, and that's, there's nothing, there's no white noise getting in the way of the skill sets that you guys have in pumping this out, and the brilliant actors that are in it. Okay, so check for listings in Bundoran in the south of the county, and also in Letterkenny. So it's in, I don't want to misname them. So in Bundoran, it's in
Eclipse Cinema. Yeah, Eclipse, so just a big shout out. We are so lucky in the Northwest to have two incredible independent cinemas in Eclipse and Century. The way they curate, the way they get behind local filmmakers, you know, this isn't a big chain. These are locally owned businesses, and we should be so proud that they're in Letterkenny and Bundoran. You can see the film twice daily in Eclipse Bundoran, and it's at 6 p.m. every night at Century in Letterkenny as well. And we really encourage, come out with your community, with your family, with your friends, and enjoy going to the cinema. You know, it's totally different than watching a film at home on a TV or on a tablet.
You've made it for the cinema primarily. Isn't that what you do?
Absolutely, yeah. And look, it's about, a film is about people coming together. So we want people to come together in the cinema and enjoy a night out as well.
Brilliant. I mean, obviously it's already, because in terms of budget, you don't have necessarily a massive marketing budget. So what's happening now is organic and based on people seeing it and buying into it as well. So it's exciting to see where it goes. You don't know yet. That's also part of the excitement of the journey. But to be getting theatrical releases in North America, that doesn't happen by accident either.
No, we're just delighted, you know, and it gives us great confidence to do the next thing and to dream big. And, you know, we're helping other filmmakers do the same and sharing our experience too. So just we want to thank everyone, you know, as well that helped us along the journey and that's continuing to help us on the journey by spreading word of mouth and coming out to the cinema.
All right, tidy up last 5 years of your social media in case you have to go to the Oscars. I'm not sure if you've heard the news, but just make sure there's nothing anti-Trump on your socials and you'll be grand.
For sure. Look, thank you so much for chatting with us,
Greg. All right, good luck to you, Edwin. Fair play to you. Thanks so much. Edwin Mullane there, director of Horseshoe, who it's his debut feature. Well, it's his debut feature along with Adam O'Keefe. He's from just outside Bundoran there, effectively. And it's on in Letterkenny and it's on in Clips in Bundoran and Century in Letterkenny. And it sounds like it could be a little gem. And I'm only going by the kind of reaction it's getting so far. Right, let me see. In relation to roadside memorials, it's an interesting one that quite a few of you have got involved in this conversation. Just to give you a catch up in case you're not familiar with the story, the government is bringing in legislation that would restrict the positioning of these memorials based on whether it's a dual carriageway or whether it's a road that has a speed limit in excess of 60 kilometres, which kind of would capture a lot of the fatal road traffic collisions, unfortunately. But this caller says, I think the memorials along the road are a good awareness for people passing to slow down. And it has unfortunately been a thing. That's not the reason why they want to sort of prohibit them. It's because sometimes there can be further instances as people, you know, there might not be lay-bys and what have you, and as people visit these memorials or maintain the grass or plant flowers, that it could in fact in itself lead to a collision. I had a family member killed in a road traffic collision by a drunk driver. I don't need any memorial at the site to remind me of him. His memorial is in the graveyard and that's enough for us. A memorial garden is a non-runner as it could be miles from where tragedy occurred. And why confine it to road tragedies? Why not drowning, suicide, etc.? With roadside memorials, there is the ongoing responsibility to maintain it ad infinitum. Another, it's the size of them that I have an issue with. Small ones are respectful. These large ones, not so much, says a listener. Another who says that they do work to slow the traffic. Anything that makes people slow down on the roads is a good thing. Another, though, says that large or elaborate memorials can distract drivers, potentially leading to more road traffic collisions. Another caller. My husband was killed by a drunk driver. My niece was the driver of the car we were in and was very traumatized by the event. I ended up in hospital on life support. There is a memorial to the driver who caused the collision, and every time I pass that area, I'm traumatized over and over. I totally disagree with them. A tribute to the person who took my husband's life and traumatized my niece, me, and our entire family is not acceptable. And I'm so sorry with what you went through. And, you know, that's why we always try and be so conscious and cautious when we talk about issues like this, because when you invite people who are affected by these things to contact you, you realise that so many of us have been, you know. So I appreciate your time and your consideration in contacting us. Welcome back to the programme. I'm joined on it now by Deputy Charles Ward of the 100% Redress party, and he and 100% Redress councillors have been responding to assertions by Junior Minister Charlie McConnellogue that significant progress under the Enhanced Effective Concrete Block Scheme has been made. He points out that 205 completed homes is good progress, and he's also said in the past as well that, you know, this is a scheme that can evolve and that will catch more people into the future, and is effectively working. Deputy Charles Ward, you don't agree with that assessment from the junior minister?
Not one single word of it do I agree with. And he says 205. Well, according to Donegal County Council, who actually are managing the scheme, there's 229 houses completed. 121 of them are full demolitions with, as far as we know, no foundations replaced. So they've been built on top of foundations that may still have delirious materials inside them. And then there was 92 with a combination. So we've got half and half, and these 92 will probably have to be revisited again in the next 10 to 20 years.
They were, I presume they were out of leaf options then, so the internal blocks remain defective.
Yeah. Yes. Then you're leaving materials that are defective in the build. And Charlie puts a spin on it because that's what the government want you to see. They want the public to see that this scheme is working. When we are now in the scheme now a couple of years, I asked Charlie before at one of his public meetings, an end-to-end scheme would be the way forward. And this is nearly 2 years ago. I said to him, one of the questions I said to him is, why can't we go for an end-to-end scheme, Charlie? This would be the way forward. Charlie turns around to me and says, well, it would never work. We wouldn't build 10 houses. Since then, we've barely built under 100 houses. An end-to-end scheme would work. And they don't want the reason they don't want this is because if it went end-to-end, everybody then would come forward and you would see the true scale of what's coming down the road, the true scale.
So you're pointing to assertions, are you, from public servants in the past, and I'm on about high-level public servants, that kind of seem to want to design the scheme to make it less attractive, in other words, so it wouldn't be overwhelmed. Is that what you think is happening here?
Yeah, of course it is. And we could see by the advice of the Attorney General, this is exactly what is happening. You know, they do not want the people of Donegal to take anywhere near the 2.2 billion that's been allocated for this scheme. They will always drum out that we've invested so many million this year and so many million next year. We need multiples of this. Mm. And we're in a humanitarian crisis here where we have houses that are crumbling down around us. And houses like this house here will not be here in 5 years' time. And there's tens of thousands of us in this same situation.
There is.
And everyone...
Now, obviously, it's fine, Charles. You're talking, though, of the amount of houses that have been remediated or rebuilt, 229. But there are plenty of applications in there. There, you know, everywhere you turn around, there seems to be a house that's being brought down. People are going on to the scheme. Is that not evidence, though, that... whilst it's not working as well as you might like, it is working. And maybe now with this increased cap that finally got over the line, maybe we'll see more people say, right now is the time for me to go. This makes it more practical.
There's 3,000 applications in currently, right? They're in, but they're not. There's no commencement dates or completions. So for us to get out, just to get out of this scheme, we need to be building 1,500 houses for the next 15 years. 1,500 houses a year for the next 15 years just to do the numbers right now. So if we do this, if we were doing this currently the way we're doing it right now at 229 houses completed, they say, but some of them are partial remediation, 200 years to get out of the scheme. That points to failure. That points to government policy and failure. And it's deliberate.
Is there any evidence that the increased cap's being reflected in quotations?
Well, I was looking at this and I thought you would come up with this question. So I'll just tell you this now. Inflation compared to last year, it was 8% inflation last year, okay, on building products. Then in January now, Roadstone, which would be probably the main concrete provider for the whole of Ireland, their prices are going to be going up 8%. Okay, then you have the concrete levy on top of that. So the cost of this 8% retrospective payment that's coming in for people, the cost of building a house next year will be possibly between 12 to 16% dearer than it is this year. Mm. And how is anybody meant to do that? You know, I mean, we're in a dire situation here. Mm. And I do feel that the government TDs are doing the people of Donegal a disservice, because what will happen is it's bad now and you think you see houses, you go, oh, well, there's houses going up here, there and everywhere. There should be multiples of these. Remember, for us to get out of the scheme, it's 1,500 houses every year for 15 years. Mm. Not... not 229.
Yeah, but just is in the interests of fairness, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Pat the Cope Gallagher, Charlie McConnell-Logue, are they better off? You mean you can't be in government, and you certainly can't be a minister, right? And diametrically oppose what the government is saying. Is Donegal not better having them certainly at a table with influence to try and progress this? Because let us not forget, you know, Joe McHugh took a stance, right? And it achieved nothing. I mean, personally, it did for him, but, you know, in terms of what he wanted to do, I don't know. I can't get inside his head. It was astonishing to see the turnaround from boos to cheers at the Dublin protests. So people's memories are really short, which is quite interesting. But, you know, there is an argument, is there not a strong argument, that we're better off if they're in there arguing from within than taking some stance and having zero influence at all?
You see, it's like this. That's an illusion, unfortunately. Where I understand where Joe McHugh came from, but several weeks later, he backed the party. Do you know what I mean?
In
votes. So where he made a sacrifice in one hand, the real sacrifice is putting the people of Donegal above your party. That's the most important thing. When you don't put the people of Donegal above your party, what will happen to them people and their lives? As a public representative, I am representing them. Above everything else, above party politics and anything, it's a humanitarian crisis. And we talk about how it's important to have a minister. We've had Minister McConnell-Logue as a minister for agriculture, and he done absolutely nothing. And there's a lot of fishermen and a lot of farmers that will say he did.
Again, in fairness, and I'm saying this, he won't come on the programme, but that's for his own reasons. You know, there's many people in the farming community are praising of him, and there were a couple of fishing schemes, that the tie-up scheme, etc. So I don't want to listen. We'll focus on.
I understand that, but I also understand the people in his own up in Inishowen who have had no swimming pool. There's 42,000 people. There's people that have to go across the day to take their children swimming. But I in the Finn Valley can go into the Finn Valley. I can go into the Finn Valley and take my kids swimming. In Letterkenny, we can take them in there. But the people of Inishowen have been absolutely abandoned and discriminated against. Okay. And I think that the minister had a responsibility to pull on the Donegal jersey. I'm a TD for Donegal. I tie my own shoelaces and I serve my constituents. And I feel that Charlie has not
but
done
surely
this.
Surely you should have been fighting to get into government, to get to be one of Lowry's crew
influence. Can I just elaborate on that? I had meetings within government officials, as in these Cummins together at the Lowry Group, and was told within that I would not be accepted into Lowry's group because Lowry's group were not going to accept somebody from a party with such a large mandate as what I requested. Yeah. I would have gone across to the government in the morning to fix people's houses. Mm. I will not discriminate against anybody. I'm here to get the homes of Donegal fixed.
Understood. Well, you understand. You understand my position. I do have to ask these.
Totally.
The 43 early adopters. Was there any provision for them at all in this enhancement or whatever you would call it?
No, and that's the heartbreaking thing, Greg. These people trusted the government. These people trusted what Darragh O'Brien said. They said, we're going to go ahead. We will not be punished. I've spoken to these people. They had faith in this, and now they're distraught. And these decisions have left these people in tens of thousands of euros in debts. And you know, the fact of the matter is, some of them could go on and get out of this eventually, 8-9 years down the line. But there's some of them that won't. They're not. This has finished them. And when they voted against the amendments, they voted against the 43 people, they voted against the people of Donegal.
There's a huge cohort of people out there just sitting in limbo. They're not making a conscious decision to not move or to move. They're just sitting there wondering, you know, maybe it'll slow down. You know, maybe it's the plaster. You know, and I think those people are in their thousands that are just saying, we're not just ready yet to actually cope with this.
Yeah, Greg, that's so true. This morning, I take phone calls all the time regarding this. This morning I spoke to a gentleman and he is distraught. He has built his home. He worked away for years. His wife is a teacher. He'll know who he is. He's a shortfall of 245,000. He is the exact same age as me. He's in the exact same position as me. We will not get the bank to give us money, and he can't get the bank to give him money. We're in the middle of our mortgages here, and we're paying thousands of euros on our mortgages, and we've got absolutely no help, and we've got to raise families and houses that are crumbling down around them, and all the mental health aspects that come with that, and trying to live an ordinary life. This is happening to tens of thousands of people, and the frustration is when you have Fianna Fáil TDs and councillors saying that this scheme is working, this scheme is working.
Is this a bad question to ask? Does this leave you in a bit of a dilemma personally, in that, you know, you got into politics for all the right reasons, but you've got into a job that is well paid. Now, obviously, when you take tax and everything out, you know, so your capacity to bridge that gap in years to come will narrow. Does that leave you? Is this? And if it's too personal a question, I really do apologise and bat it away. Does that leave you in a position where you'd be almost embarrassed to progress? Because that gentleman that you talk of.
Yeah, I can answer that question. I have four children, okay? And my children are at different stages in their lives, and we're living in a crumbling home.
Yeah.
And if I get the opportunity to try and fix my home, of course I would fix my home, okay?
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is, I am one of tens of thousands. There's children here now in Donegal that should be at college this year, and they can't because their parents are trying to put a roof over their head any way they can. And we need to recognise it as a humanitarian crisis. And I believe this week our Donegal TDs that voted against these amendments have done us a great disservice.
Right, okay. Again, there was no malice in that question. I just thought
I understand. But see the difference? You can ask me anything and I will answer for you. Mm. I am transparent. I'm there for the people of Donegal. Mm. That's the most important thing to me.
Believe it or not, generally, I do try and be fair with my questions, even if some claim I'm not. Yes. Thanks very much, Deputy Charles Ward. Look after yourself. 086 60 25,000. Have you anything to say? Breda Doherty is a social committee member with Glen Swilly GEA Club, and lots of great events, as always. Not least amongst them, a Christmas teenage disco. Good morning to you, Breda.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so talk to us about this safe space for young ones to go out and express themselves and have a bit of fun.
So basically last year at our AGM, we come up with the idea of hosting teenage discos and having community events within the clubhouse, reaching out probably to the wider audience of the community as well as GA community, just to make it a safe place, as you said, and to invite people that maybe have nowhere to go to socialise, or basically for that younger generation that socialising seems to have become a thing of the past. So this disco is our fifth one now. We started them last April. And we're hoping for a big night tonight. It's for second and third years.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's very authentic because you've got DJ Paddy Freelin, who is one of the top DJs in the Northwest. So the kids will know about him. He's doing great stuff. So you're going to give them that real sort of club experience. And I like the dress code, Christmas theme, i.e. Christmas jumpers or a jersey. So it eliminates maybe that sort of competitive element to it, and there's other reasons to I presume for that as well, but anyway, it's all set up for fun.
So I suppose the idea of the jerseys and the leggings was something that we just did for maybe kids that wouldn't be comfortable wearing maybe the type of clothes that are in fashion at this stage and in their life. It's not easy for everybody to wear some of the skimpier clothes that's going, especially the girls. And of course, the boys will be comfortable in their sportswear. It doesn't matter where they're going. So, yeah, it was just definitely, it was It was just an idea. We actually we took it from another disco that had been doing really well in the south of the county, and we spoke to them, and they said that it worked really well for them.
Okay.
And they were a massive help to us to set it up, to get it going. Like, we went up and seen their disco one night, and like they really did give us all the help that we needed to just kind of get it off the ground.
It's part of the community too, the wider community. 9 to 11 tonight, €12 admission, DJ Paddy Freel on the decks. Dress code, Christmas theme, or jerseys only, so everyone should go along and feel comfortable. And it's at Glen Swilly GEA in the hall, is it? Whereabouts is it? Sorry?
In the clubhouse. In the Glen Swilly GEA clubhouse.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
And we have plenty of supervisors, and we hopefully have it the most safest environment for that age group. Gets them out of their house.
Is it specifically
off their phone
for second and third classes? Because you know yourself, some kids more mature, some kids less, but it is second and third years. That's the target age groups.
First, second and third years, great.
First, second and third, okay. I'm just missing out then, so. All right, then. Fair play to you, Breeda. Good luck with that. I'm sure it's going to be a great night. Shannon Wilkins is in studio with me. Shannon Wilkin, taking a look at what's been trending online. And Pamela Anderson and Liam Neeson, I like this story because firstly, they're two, you know, aging very gracefully, I think, and they seem like a good match. Is it off or on? Is it on?
Apparently, it only lasted a week.
It's gone. It's off.
I know.
Oh, no.
So we didn't know if it was 100%
I saw that film,
on.
Naked Gun, and it's really highly rated, but I thought it was terrible.
Really?
Was
it supposed to be funny?
Of course, Naked Gun, it's based on the old Leslie Nielsen films. And it was kind of like a rejig of that. But it just, sometimes I think maybe I'm watching a film when I'm not in the mood, and maybe that was it. But I just thought it was cheesy. And anyway. But
did you watch
lots
it at home or in the cinema?
At home.
See, I think sometimes that can make a difference too.
Of course it can,
because you're not fully concentrating on it. Maybe you need to see it in the cinema.
I can see myself looking around at other people laughing, going, ha, 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 ha. Right, okay, so anything else, or is that just the news?
That's just the news.
Okay, right, I'm heartbroken at that. Right, now, Dirt Bean Liam.
Dirt Ban Lum.
That's what I just said. Dirt Ban Lum.
Dirt Ban
Lum. What's this?
So this was actually, I was just after walking the dog last night and I came home and Mum had this TV programme on. Then I started to see all these familiar places and I was like, what's going on here? So we had Garda Hork in it, we had Falkara in it, we had beautiful Maharorti, and I was going to get up, go for a shower and go to bed, and I actually couldn't get off the couch. I just kept watching it.
Wow.
So we're going to chat to the director and the actors in it, hopefully on Monday, just
excellent.
About what
look
it's all about.
That.
But anything to promote Donegal.
Elf on the Shelf
good.
Pranks. Now, some of this stuff, the elf, I'm not sure I want to talk about this one with you. I mean, you're talking about the naughty elves, aren't you?
No.
That get up to aggro in the middle of the night.
Mine was more kind of funny. So this is for all the girls out there maybe who want an engagement ring this Christmas.
Okay, cool.
Set up your elf on the shelf with a wee engagement ring and get him to write a wee letter on why your boyfriend hasn't
proposed
yet.
Do girls do that though? Like, you know.
I saw a TikTok.
See, you have to, you do literally quite have to tell us.
Okay, you aren't mind readers, really?
No, we're not mind readers. So, like, I mean, are you in that space?
No.
That's a no. Okay, but if you were, would you be inclined to say it?
Apparently, like another thing you can do,
like I see
you
some
just
of these
speak
women
to the phone and just go, engagement ring, engagement ring, engagement ring. So every time he's away to the bathroom. And then
I see some of these videos on socials and the women seem to be so ecstatic. It's like the best thing they ever wanted. And I'm like, I've never met anyone like this.
Yeah, in real life. I'm trying to think, do I know any examples?
Yeah, but it's lovely. Yeah, sure. Right, let me see, what next? We probably have time for one more, so I'll let you pick it up.
One more. All right, we didn't get to it last week, so we're going to do it Christmas chip.
Right.
So it turns out a lot of people don't actually know what that is. I asked John, he didn't know, you didn't know, Joe didn't know.
Yeah, well, Christmas chip, people describe chips from a takeaway in the singular, so that confused me. And I thought, remember you did the triple dip chip before? And I also thought we're going over this again.
Okay.
So this is Christmas dinner in a box, really,
Christmas
is it?
Christmas dinner in a box.
Go on, what's
so
in it?
We've got your turkey, your ham, your stuffing, your cranberry, your gravy, and either a chunky or a skinny chip, whatever your preference is.
And it's on top of it.
Yeah, it's on top of it.
So it's loaded fries with
loaded
Christmas stuff.
Fries.
You've had a few of these.
I haven't actually got
who is it, then?
My list.
Oh, right, you
properly.
Did have a list.
I had one business, and then I saw another business in Inishowen, and I was like, I'm not driving to Inishowen.
The tip
for
is hold the
Christmas
gravy.
Chips.
Is that my friend in Inishowen?
Yeah.
Okay, right. The the tip, though, I heard from Caroline is hold the gravy.
Funny enough, though, when I ordered mine, I had to make extra gravy. She wasn't gravy enough for me.
Right, okay.
But Mammy doesn't like too much gravy on hers, so she said it was perfect.
Wilkin, you can't be up to you guys.
Personal
brilliant
preference.
Stuff. So get out there. Where's your favourite Christmas chip? Yep. Thanks, Shannon. We'll leave more time next week because I need to know more stuff that's what's going on. Listen, thanks, Shannon. Thanks, Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show today. Thank you for your company all week. We're back with you on Monday morning at 9. So have a great weekend.